You'll need to unlock your iPhone first.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Sue.
Hi, Sue. Can you guys hear me now?
Hi, guys.
Yeah.
Would you rather have the ability to...
You can hear me or no?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Thank you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Good.
Okay, we have all of the board members are here, and it's just now 9 o'clock, and I've started the recording. So I'm going to ask that everyone other than DD board members and staff, please sign into the chat with your agency affiliation if you have one. I'm at the, I'm in the Brookings Administration Building in our staff office, which is the posted meeting room, just in case anyone from the public wants to participate in person, and I have a separate computer set up for them across from me. So, all right, I'm ready.
Okay. Shall we call the meeting to order? Stephanie, do you want to do the roll call, please?
Sure, Gil Kennedy. You're muted, Gil. Gail is motioning that she is here. Deb Roosh?
Here.
Georgiana Schuster?
I am here.
Sue Suter?
Here.
Ann Robin?
Here.
So sorry, I don't know why it wouldn't unmute. Gail Kennedy is here.
Thank you.
All right, is that it?
Yes.
Okay, the next item is Zoom instructions, and everybody's here, so I think that's good. Thank you for sending out the Zoom link again. How about the approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion about the agenda? All right. Stephanie, I guess we have to voice approve everything.
Yes. Deb Rouge?
Yes.
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Sue Sitter?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes. Okay, the next item is citizen input public participation. Is there anyone who is on the meeting who would like to make a presentation of up to 5 minutes? All right, anybody on the chat? Anybody saying anything on the chat that we should pay attention to?
So Ann, I've been advised by one of our attorneys to go out and check outside to see if anyone has come to give public input. So I'm going to do that right now. I'll be right back.
All right. Well, the next item, we'll just wait for her to do that and then come back. All right, nobody there.
No one was here.
Okay, well then we will strike that one. If someone shows up later and wants to have input, then we will open up that agenda item again. That will be the chairperson's prerogative. So the next item is chairperson comments, and I do have a couple of comments. Once again, thanks to everyone for being here. This is a momentous day for our nation and our world. And we're hoping to keep this meeting down to an hour so that people can participate virtually in larger events that are going on. But meanwhile, we're carrying on with what we're doing here. And the one comment I did want to make is having to do with what just happened, Lynn going out to check to see if anybody is here. I personally, and as chairperson and a member of the board, and a local physician and longtime community member, have a very grave concern about Lynn's safety, being in the building by herself, in a dead-end room, with weird things going on. We have not only the pandemic to deal with, but we also have kind of a pandemic of weird violence going on in this country. And so far, our community has been pretty safe, but we can't assume that we're completely safe. And Lynn has gotten advice from two attorneys that she needs to stay in the building and accessible to people that might come in and want to participate in the meeting due to the Open Meetings Act. I have information from talking with just, you know, personal attorney looking at the Open Meetings Act that this is open for interpretation. And I just want to go on record as saying that the personal safety of our staff, including our executive director and anybody else associated with our board, is of utmost importance. Open meetings are very, very important. We're making every effort to make the meetings open to the community electronically. The phone lines are available. I think that we should revisit the issue of personal safety for Lynn and any other staff people that are in the office. Our meeting is during daylight hours, which is a little bit easier, but the mental health board meeting is after the offices are closed, it's dark, and I do have some real concerns about that. So those are my comments. And I do have some more uplifting things to share, but I'll wait until we have board announcements to tell you about those things.
Hey, I wholeheartedly agree with you, Ann. I'm sorry, I didn't raise my hand. I'll second everything you said about safety, and I agree that if there's a way to revisit that and reinterpret legally the requirements that have been put on you in particular, Lynn, I think that we should, as a board, do that.
Thank you. Any other comments on that issue?
I second that also. If we can talk to the attorneys and make some quick change so that this happens quickly rather than in a month from now, we should do that.
I don't know if we should put that as a motion or just have comments from the board. What would be your advice, Lynn?
Gail has her hand raised as well.
Only to say that I agree. That's all.
I will continue to, actually, when I give my comments, I'll share a little bit about what I think we can do.
Okay, well, you're next.
Okay, well, it's an interesting issue because it's bookended with some work that we did in December at the joint study session, where a really important topic is access to the meetings, access to the documents, you know, being able to invite the public into this work in whatever ways we can. And during a time when we can't really be very close to people, we are only here one person each day, so we're a little harder to reach than we used to be. Although we're being very responsive by email, you know, people who don't use Zoom meetings probably also don't use email. So some of the issues that y'all brought up at the study session in December on cultural competence and access were really interesting. And our team had some really spirited discussions after that about what are the things that we could do, that first of all, the things that are free to do, and we did some of them, and then some things that might cost a lot more, like having an ASL interpreter at every meeting is like, that's a goal. That's a really very, very expensive addition to the meetings, but what a great thing it would be if we could afford to do it and if we could always find people. So, you know, we can't do everything that's right in front of us, but we can explore some of them. So we had the meeting itself captioned fully in English, and then I went in and edited because people's names were misspelled and some words were misunderstood by the captioning service. And then we also had it captioned in Spanish, which my knowledge of Spanish is so poor that I didn't even try to edit that. Both of those versions are posted where we post all the meeting archives. So that's one reason. So then there, you might also notice that we've changed the look of the agenda and the look of the schedule to include some statements about our willingness to provide, like whether it's large print documents or other ways people might access, or if people wanted to send us a recording that we could play of them giving public input, or if they want to send us a letter to read during public input, just how to contact us for if they would like to participate but can't. And then we can translate documents on our copier, but I'm not sure that it's a more accurate translation than something like Google Translate. And I'm sure you've all played with Google Translate enough to know that it's not that helpful, but we can do it. There's a cost per page. So, you know, we've been talking about things like that and very excited to do the captioned videos, but the cost was $300. So again, that's not an immediately achievable goal. So, you know, this was why when we started talking about how do we let people into the meetings at all, especially when, you know, some of my colleagues in this building have received death threats, you know, yeah. I'm really hesitant to set up this second laptop and leave the door open. Like, I also have an obligation to protect government property and our work products. So I have been talking to the attorneys. I've also talked to the sheriff. I have the director of the physical plant at Brookins is coming over today to meet with me about how we might make the office itself safer. If we can make the office a little bit safer, then it might become our best meeting area for all of the Zoom, whenever we're doing Zoom meetings. So that's kind of, it's a work in progress, and I do appreciate everyone's input and concern, because it's like, it's a little scary to come here anyway, but then to have an obligation to let people in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know them. I can't see very well anymore. I don't think I can defend myself here. I'm saying it in a public recording. Anyway, so apart from that, the issues of access are very important. This material, the work that you all do, really should be accessible to people. I think it's a really important topic for us to keep active. And along those lines, I was very excited to be able to start the year with what might be the most positive presentation we've had in a really long time. And that's what happened to the expo last year. It's just, it's like, even if we couldn't have a live in-person expo, there was a lot of thinking and innovation and some really interesting efforts to reach people. And that's the expo's goal, is to improve access and reach people. So I'm very excited to bring you that. The other presentation, or it's not a presentation, but the other big discussion material in this board packet is around our SILA project. And this is really mostly to bring you up to date on what we've done so far, because there were a lot of technical changes that had to be made. They're all done. And I just kind of want everyone to know where we're at right now, and then to hear your thoughts on the project and questions, and maybe start thinking about what could happen next. And then other than that, it's a very light action meeting, so I will zip my lip and move on.
Thank you for that, Lynn.
Excuse me, Ian. Lynn, so getting back to the safety and security, so you're gonna talk to the sheriff, the building folks, or you have talked to the sheriff, the building folks. Do you need anything more from us so that you feel secure and comfortable?
No, not today. And as Anne pointed out, it's far less of a concern for morning meetings than it is for the evening meetings. So I do have a little more work to do for those. But I'm good, and I appreciate all your comments. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we want everybody to be as safe as possible. And I think that the key word that I remember seeing in the Open Meetings Act having to do with the pandemic is the word feasible. What's feasible? And I think we should have our legal people talk a little bit more, and our security people, about what is feasible in terms of incorporating staff safety. Of course, safety of government property too, but I'm more concerned about personnel. So the next item is the board minutes from November and December. And those were included in the board packet, which we got electronically. And I personally got my print board packet yesterday in the mail. I'm hoping everybody else got theirs too. Thank you to Stephanie for getting it out in a time of time. Who the heck knows what happened with the Postal Service? It usually works very well, but this month it did not. Any comments about the board meeting minutes, or should I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
I will second it.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, Stephanie, would you please take the roll?
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Deb Roosh?
Yes.
Ann Ryan?
Yes. Okay, the minutes are approved from November and December. And the next item is the expenditure list, which is a little bit shorter this time because we're early in the year. I found it a little bit difficult to read sideways on the computer.
But you can turn it any way you want when it's printed. So that's okay. Any a motion to approve the expenditure list, please?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion about the expenditure list? Hearing none, Stephanie, would you take the roll, please?
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Deb Roosh?
Yes.
Georgiana Schuster?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes. Okay, I think that's all of our action items. So we've got that accomplished. And the next item is new business, and we are going to have a presentation from the Disability Resource Expo people. And I'm very much looking forward to that. And I think we have told them that they can have 20 minutes for their presentation. We don't want to limit them. But we're looking very much forward to their presentation. Are you ready?
I'm not sure if everybody's here.
Okay.
I'm going to check the participant list.
Okay.
We are expecting 4 people. We have Barb Bresner, who has been the coordinator of the Expo for all 14 years that we've done them. She's got an assistant coordinator, which is Jim Mayer, that he's also been involved with all of them. But he's been the official assistant coordinator for maybe 5 years. And he is going to be leaving at the beginning of April due to the demands of his other work and also retirement coming. So Dylan Boot has agreed to take on that role. So Dylan will also be joining us. And Dylan's wife, Allison Boot, also happens to be our social media person, the public relations specialist. So she has had a role in the expo and also in the air activities for quite a long time. So I don't see them. I'm going to find out what time they're coming.
Lynn, I would, just while we're waiting for them, excuse me, I have to leave a little early to get my COVID vaccine, yay. I'm on the, steering committee for the expo. And I just want to commend Barb and Jim and Dylan and Allison, who's done a terrific job on the social media. And considering where we started and how well you can read the evaluations, and I know they'll talk about it, but I just want to commend them on how well they've done to meet this challenge and really exceed what we had hoped for.
Right.
And I see your background, Lynn. That's very nice.
Yes.
In the spirit.
Maybe,
Kim, I don't know if your microphone is working. Maybe you could give a little bit of info about what y'all, Kim has been involved in.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. It's working. Yeah. So we have been doing recordings for the pre-recorded sections of the Third Thursday resource roundups. We usually do 2 recordings in preparation for the upcoming session. So we're working on February now. We did one last week, and we have one next week. So we do those, and then after those recordings are finished, I send those to Rev for captioning, which is the online site that we used for the study session. And then we have a student from U of I who has been the most amazing help for us, that she lays the captioning, she burns that into the recording, and then we take those, she edits those as well, because sometimes we have some mishaps in the recording sessions. People go too fast or they stumble upon their words, so we just start over on the recording. So she edits anything out. If the videos are too long, she also edits those to get it down to as close to 30 minutes as possible. And then we use those during the live event. So in the live event, we have Jim and Barb who, you know, kind of welcome everybody and get, you know, give everybody a chance to get in and kind of get settled. And then here's Barb now. So we do the video, we do the short little presentations. We have the breakout rooms with the exhibitors who would normally have been at the expo at the vineyard. And then we have a longer presentation from a featured agency or exhibitor who was signed up as a featured presentation for what should have been in March of this year. So I'm going to stop since Barb is here. I don't know if Barb's ready, but Barb can share more if she is ready.
Hello. Can folks hear me? Okay. Everybody can hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Good. I was having a few problems with my audio last night. So anyway, glad I'm not today. So yeah. Well, I'm happy to be here today and say hi to everybody. I hope everybody's well. Staying that way. We've certainly had to make some major changes this year with the our annual expo. Of course, we were just about to engage in it last year, 2 weeks out, and had to cancel. So we had to get creative. We explored a lot of different options and finally came up with these mini four-part mini series, which we have been doing. We did our first one October 15th, and what we did is we split up. You know, typically we have about 100 exhibitors at the expo, so we kind of split it up into categories and tried to do, you know, split it as equally as we could. So we put out the call to our exhibitors and, we've had, 15 to, I think 18 exhibitors each, for each event. And, so anyway, in October 15th, we had our healthcare and equipment providers. They came together. We had, Kim, you could probably tell us this better, but I think we had about 50-ish people at that one, participants. It went very well. What we typically do is we, and maybe Kim filled people in already on some of this, but we typically split it into two sessions where we pre-record our a little 2-minute blurb where each exhibitor can kind of share what their organization is about and just give a little overview. And then we also, because we had some presenters that were to present at the event last year, We found a way to keep them involved. So we would tape like about a 10 to 15 minute presentation from those folks. So we would have about a half hour basically of the overview of the different exhibitors presentation. And then also, we wanted the ability to do some live chat with the exhibitors for our participants. So each event has included two 15-minute breakouts, and participants were able to choose when they registered what those breakouts, who they would visit with in those breakout rooms. And so that has gone really pretty well. Let's see, what else did we do? And I think, we did the one then in November with our self-help groups and vocational residential and recreation organizations. And then we are getting ready for our one tomorrow. That will be our advocacy, legal, and service organizations that will be with us. And they are all ready to go. We've done all the recordings. So that will happen tomorrow between 3 and 4:30. And then on February 18th, we will have our final one. That will be education services and services for young children. So that'll be happening here in February. Let's see. Tomorrow's event, we will have 17 exhibitors, and we will also have a presentation by CCAMR. So that's all set to go. One of the neat things that's happened in this is we've gotten two new exhibitors that have contacted us that will be joining us for the February event. One is called Continuum Behavioral Health, I believe. And then there is the new one that is called Amazing Sensory Designs. And they'll be with us next month. They have a really cool, they have sensory items. They design rooms, basically, for, you know, kids with autism, kids with sensory issues. And he had a really neat display during his interview. So we're looking forward to that. And those two are also interested in staying with us for our next in-person event that we hopefully have coming up. So we have a schedule for October 16th of 2021 for our next annual in-person, hopefully, event over at the Vineyard. So let's see. Not sure what else. I guess that's kind of the way we've structured everything. I think it's gone very well. We have each event, we've seen more participants. We've seen participant grow. I think we have 72 or something like that for tomorrow. So that's gone up. So anyway, hopefully maybe we'll hit 100 for February. So turn it over to Jim. He can kind of share some more information about what we've been doing.
All right. Thanks, Barb. Hello, everyone. I thought it would be helpful if I did a screen share of our expo website just to, help give an overview of these TTRR, these Third Thursday Resource Roundup events. And also it'll allow you to see some of the things we've done in terms of posting videos from both from these events and from our student volunteers from U of I. So, forgive me if you already have spent a lot of time looking at our website, but for those who maybe haven't had a chance to do that, I thought I would just use this as a kind of a visual aid here for our conversation. Okay, let's see, where is my...
You should have access to the share screen. Do you see it?
Yeah, it's letting me share. Let me try something else here. I think I may need to. Let's see.
Well, Ian, while Jim is doing that, I just want to say that Kim has been a tremendous help to this and managing and all the technical stuff. So thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Sue. It's been my pleasure. It's been something very new, challenging at times, but we've gotten through it. It gives me a lot of anxiety, but we've done it. This is going to be our third time tomorrow, so we're old pros now.
Well, you wouldn't, I don't see the anxiety. You've done a terrific job.
So Kim's expertise that, you know, kind of developed because we needed it was why we were able to so quickly put together captioned versions of that study session, because she knew how to do that and had the service lined up. We did have glitches, but Kim, it was amazing.
I had to get help from our student that's doing the expo videos. She was kind enough to kind of walk me through it in an email. It was more challenging than I thought.
Kim has been, you know, done a great job with this. And I, you know, me not being a very techie person, I got to say I'm just really so grateful for all she's done with this. So I also wanted to mention, forgot to mention that, you know, we do have everything closed captioned. And we also have American Sign Language interpreters that are there. When folks register, they can request an interpreter or whatever their accommodation needs might be. But we've had some great interpreters with us, and all of the pre-recorded material that we've done is, you know, we have an ASL interpreter right on the screen with us. And then in the breakout rooms, we will have, you know, folks that are in there to help with those who need that. And then also this time around, for tomorrow, we've got a Spanish interpreter, and we also have the Spanish subtitles. Looks like Jim's ready to go.
All right, so I'm going to go to our events page for this school year, which has, you know, everything we should need. So this is, like I said, the it's also known as the 2020 Expo page, but I'm just going to call it the events page for this year, since we've gone to more of an events format. And you can see here that in the top paragraph is usually where people would register for our third Thursday resource roundup events. I changed it right after last weekend because, you know, registration is now closed for this Thursday's event. So it just says thanks to those who registered. And it also points out that people should return to this page soon to register for our February and our final, you know, event coming up third Thursday of February. And then this page, you know, continues to point out for folks that, you know, beyond the third Thursday resource roundups, you know, that we are posting events from those. So, you know, it has here the videos, as you can see, from our October 15th event. People can look at the overview of exhibitors, or they can look at the featured presentation, which was a Medicare overview from Health Alliance. And then people can also look at our videos from the November 19th event, the overview of those exhibitors, which were support groups and vocational, residential, and recreation providers. Plus, they can look at the featured presentation, which was on seizure first aid, presented by the Epilepsy Foundation. Then this page also points out to people that we did print our resource book for this year, and that those are available for distribution. And also people can click on an electronic copy of the full book here. And then it also points out that people should peruse our website to note the informational videos. Then, you know, further down this page, you know, there's our captioned informational video that we, you know, that was filmed about a year ago and was, you know, a wonderful volunteer effort of Lynn's daughter. And then, excuse me, you know, it also points out to people that we are, you know, planning to have a live expo again in October of this year. And it gives people examples, you know, if they're a potential exhibitor or participant, they can see what, you know, typically our live expo looks like. So this shows them the map that had been planned, you know, for the 2020 expo. And it also shows them, you know, our list of exhibitors that we had planned for 2020. So it gives an idea of the scope, usual scope of the event with 100 exhibitors and so forth. It also gives them a link here to our cancellation notice. If people want to know more about why we canceled this year, they can click on that, and they can also, you know, send us an email or give us a call if they have further questions. So now I'm going to take you to the resource guide portion of the website, where you'll see how we've posted some of these videos, you know, concerning our individual exhibitors. So I'm just, you know, this is an alphabetical listing of basically current and past exhibitors. That's our comprehensive resource guide. And I'm going to click on one of this year's exhibitors. You know, the Ambucks are one of our exhibitors for this coming week's event. But I'm going to go to one that has already, here's Behavior Perspective. So they are an exhibitor for our February TTR event, but they also did a student video. So you can see here the way we've posted those videos. You can click on, you know, that link to the video, and it brings up for you the student video that was produced for Behavioral Perspective. And I'm not going to show that video now because you won't have good audio quality. But if you want to see one of our, you know, our videos produced by our U of I students this year, you know, we've now posted, I think it's about 15 videos at this point that the students have produced for us. I think it's slightly more than 15, but that gives you an example on that. And then I'm just going to return to our resource directory to show you one of our exhibitors who participated already this year. Here's C-Carts. They participated in the November TTRR event. And you'll see here, we have a link to their video clip, basically from our exhibitor overview that we featured in November. And we have these, you know, approximately 2-minute clips that have ASL interpreter and captions. So if you wanted to watch that video, you would just click. And here you would have,
hello,
you know,
a 1 minute and 44 second
video. Again, you can see the ASL interpreter, you can see our exhibitors from C-Carts, and then Barb and myself. So this is our typical screen for the exhibitor overviews from the TTRR events. And so those clips can be found, you know, individually by exhibitor. And then also they are part of that exhibitor overview that I showed you earlier on the events page. So, you know, that gives you an idea of how we've tried to incorporate the various elements of these TTR RR events into the website, and also the student videos, how those have incorporated. And then there's one other feature that we're working on. We hope to eventually have Spanish subtitled versions of our videos from the TTRR events that are accessible on the website. Those have been a little bit more of a longer term project for us, just due to the amount of labor we're asking of our student editor, Emily, but she's diligently working on those kind of probably as we speak. So, all right, so I'm gonna get rid of the screen share here and bring us back to our normal meeting. Any questions on any of that?
That was very impressive. Thank you very much.
Sure, you're most welcome. And so, Barb, did we wanna now move to Dylan and Allison to talk about the evaluation and the social media aspects?
That sounds good. Dylan and Allison, you on there? Okay. I think you guys are muted. There we go.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
My name is Dylan Burke.
I'm Allison Burke.
And we are going to talk about a few other aspects. But I want to say one thing before I get started. I have a speech impairment, as you can tell. So if you guys have trouble understand me, please just stop me and I'll be happy to repeat myself or I'll have my wife Allison repeat for me.
Yes.
Dylan, thank you very much for that. I find your speech quite easy to understand, and thank you. I think all of us should say that because some of us talk too fast. So thank you.
I was just going to say the microphone and amplification are a game changer. I totally understand you.
Good. I'm going to speak here. Okay, so the each time that we have a TTR event, we ask our participants to fill a survey. And I just wanted to touch on some of the highlights for you guys. The first one is we asked how effective this approach is, and as you can see, over 90% of the people that responded rated it at a 4 out of 5 or 5 out of 5. So that tells us that what we are doing is effective. Next, we asked how accessible each portion of our event is. And as you can tell, they were all rated very highly, especially the feature presentations that we had. So again, this showed us that what we are doing is very effective at getting information out there in this format. And finally, I just wanted to show you some of the comments that we got from what they liked the most. So I'll let you guys read that for a minute, and then I want to open up to questions from you guys.
Dylan, thank you very much for that. This is very, very helpful. Any questions from the group for Dylan and Allison?
I have a question. This is Georgiana. And maybe this is not specifically for Dylan and Allison, but I'm curious about when we get back to in-person expos. I really like the way everything is laid out on this remote expo, and it makes it so accessible to everyone. Is that gonna, also be the case when we have in person, where we have listings of all the participants, and will we have videos and that kind of thing? But will that happen again when we are back in person?
Hey, that's one of the things we have tried. We've really strived to make each of our expos very accessible. We have a committee, which is part of the steering committee, that looks at accommodations and making sure that every part of the expo is accessible to all. So we do strive hard to do that. I don't know if that answers your question.
Another thing I could mention, Barb, is, you know, part of our conversation leading into, you know, the live event that had to be canceled this past year, part of our discussion was to perhaps enlist a roving videographer who might go around the event and do some little interviews with exhibitors, you know, that might then be posted afterwards on the website and utilized that way. So, you know, that could be a possible future addition to the event. You know, the videographer we spoke with, we found out was not cheap. You know, it was going to cost, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 was what he was going to charge. But, you know, there may be someone else out there who would offer to do that at a lesser fee. But, you know, that was part of our conversation this past year.
Any other questions?
Thank you for your excellent presentation. This is very uplifting. And thank you for all of your hard work. You've done a great job, and I know you're going to continue to do a great job. So thanks again.
So I'm going to turn this over to Allison now.
So as Dylan said, I also have some information to share in regards to social media. Like Jim said earlier, I handle our social platforms. We have platforms on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and most recently, YouTube. The data I'm about to show you is from our Facebook page, because that's where we have the largest platform. And that's also where we've had a platform the longest. So it has more presence. Unfortunately, this data is just for the past 4 weeks, because that's what Facebook algorithm allows. But going forward, I'm going to make sure I search the data periodically. So we had 63 page views, which is people that searched for the expo page specifically, 63 of those in the past 4 weeks. And over 2,000 people saw one of our posts come up in their Facebook feed. I post not only about our expo events, but also disability news locally and nationally. I'd say 5 to 6 times a day I post. So that explains why there are so many of those. And then post engagement, we had 358 of those. That just means that 358 people either commented, shared, or liked one of our postings. We also had 400 people watch at least 3 seconds of one of the videos that we posted. And that does not include people that watched videos repeatedly. So does anybody have any questions in regards to social media?
Once again, this is very impressive. Thank you.
I think with the, you know, with the virtual nature of an event, social media has really been our, probably our best way to promote to the community or to, you know, to our audience. So, and Allison has done an awesome job with that. We've done other promotional things like we, such as we do with our live event. I mean, we have, we've used the interior bus signs. We've done a billboard. You know, we've done things like that. But I think the social media really has helped get that out. We've also done a lot of email blasts, which, you know, is also helpful because our folks that, you know, work with folks with disabilities can get that information out to where it needs to go. So that's been really good. Also wanted to mention real quick that our sponsors that we had lined up for the live event, pretty much most of them have stayed with us through this, which is pretty cool, I think. It's definitely a different ball game for them, but they've hung in. The radio stations hung in with us and gave us some advertising and such and interviews. And so the TV, we've done CI Living and the morning show for each of our events, each of the four or three so far. So that's also a good way to get the word out. So anyway, I just want to thank the team because, thank goodness Jim had a lot more technical skills than I have and Dylan and those guys, but just to figure this all out, how to do it. So I just commend all of them for, you know, making this happen. And so that's pretty much it. Questions about any of this?
I'm sorry, this is Gail Kennedy. I do have one question. How do you see this type of format integrating into the Disability Expo in the future? Is it possible to do both, to run one at the same time as the other?
It's a good question. certainly I would think that pieces of this, not everybody is able to get to a live event. And so if there are some parts of this that, you know, can carry on, I would think we might want to look at that.
So could I make a comment? I think maybe other board members have questions, but to that one, I think that's a really great question. And whatever we're doing in October might actually look really different from other in-person expos. It just depends on the circumstances, you know, which develop before October. We could need to have a low attendance. We could need to have some bumpers on who's in and for how long. In which case, like, it's all extra right now to figure all of this out. And it's extra to have people working on two different kinds of expo. But it could be really appropriate for moving forward. So this has been a year of discovery. And toward that, I wanted to say, Barb, I thank you for welcoming so many new people into the key team. There are some people not on this call who we haven't mentioned, which are all those students from the U of I, and one of whom just really like joined your team and really supported the work amazingly well. And there's also the woman who runs our websites and has worked with Jim to build up the website to the way it looks now, which is really beautiful. And also, y'all have given some time to our other partners at the U of I, at the Community Data Clinic, who are interested in developing website directory products similar to this. So I appreciate all that you have done to stretch this year beyond the steering committee and the normal committees and operations. That's all I wanted to say, but sorry.
We've certainly all learned how to do things differently. And yeah, I do. Yeah, the students, and particularly Emily, has just been amazing to work with us. And she has really done so much. Really appreciated that. Dylan and Allison, they've just really run with, you know, Dylan with all of this you know, the surveys and a lot of technical stuff in the background that he's done and Allison with promoting. And it's definitely taken the village to make this happen.
Good teamwork. Well, I want to thank everybody for this excellent presentation. And I don't want to cut you off, but I do want to move on because there's an inauguration that starts in about half an hour. So I think Sue may have had to leave to go get her COVID immunization. Are there any more comments about the Disability Resource Expo presentation before we say thank you again to our participants? Well, thank you again. That was a wonderful presentation. Lynn, do you want to give, that was the uplifting part, and now Lynn's going to give the more difficult part presentation about what's going on with Scylla.
I guess I should reframe this in my own mind, and especially when I bring it to you. I'm going to share the screen too, just to kind of move this quickly, but I have to get to the right page. So what I was hopeful about here is, to summarize, we made a number of technical changes over the last couple of years. One, first, the Mental Health Board paid off the whole mortgage. So now we're in a position where we can get a clearer idea of what this project actually costs each year, you know, without the ownership of the homes being a given. The DD Board still has three payments left to make to equal the amount that the Mental Health Board has put in. But that's money that's in the background for things like if insurance doesn't cover a new roof, which, you know, happily insurance covered a lot of things, but we do have to do a fireplace, then it's below the deductible. So we have new insurance, it's in the DD Board's name, the homes are now, the titled owner is the DD Board, insurance has changed, the leases have changed, and the property management agreements have all changed. Everything has been updated to have the DD Board as the owner of the homes. Otherwise, the financial and programmatic obligations of the project remain shared by the two boards. In other words, if the boards were to sell the homes, the money would be split equally. So all of that was captured a few years ago in the intergovernmental agreement. The intergovernmental agreement did need to be updated to reflect the change in the technical ownership of the homes. So that's in here too. I'm ready to share the screen just to walk you through the documents. And this is an issue that we'll probably need to address again. So here is my update on the project, its purpose, where it came from. Interestingly, back in 2014, the state and including the governor's office was very active in a system redesign process. One of the main focuses was to bring people with developmental disabilities out of institutional care. And there was some federal money and federal incentives to support that. So I haven't gone on in any length here because when those were over, they were just over. Well, the financial incentive at the federal level remains and has been renewed. So it's possible that under the current governor, Illinois may take up some of those system redesign efforts again. And it would be very timely because it looks like the pandemic has sort of pushed the DD system backwards, where we're relying more heavily on institutional care with people with DD, making something like the Scylla project even more relevant. Behind this project was the fact that in this community, people with multiple and serious support needs could not find a small group home setting. So we were trying to fill a gap. So this kind of, the updates include all the technical agreements and then related to financial activities. There's a funny thing in your budget for this project, and that's it's a gift. The people it was for call it a trust fund, but it's not a trust. It was a gift to the Mental Health Board that can only be used on behalf of one person who lives in a Scylla. So its presence keeps your revenues and expenses higher than they really are. So I wanted to give you a more realistic picture of what actual expenditures are headed towards. It looks like this project could be in the range of $20,000 a year, and that's expenditures which are then offset by rent. And we did lower the rent, but then there were some other updates that are important, and that's what was happening with the company that provides the SILA services. The environment for providing those services has become much harder in the last year. And so right now, one of the group homes is not occupied. They were not able to continue safely staffing that house. So we have, right now, only one of the homes is occupied. So depending on what happens, I feel strongly that we should hold on to this commitment to the people who live there and the staff who are providing services. But if it becomes in their best interest to go somewhere else, then you will have two empty houses and we will have some choices to make. And one of those could be sell the houses. Another could be define a different purpose for them. And the third could be to issue another RFP very similar to the one from 2014 and find a different provider to offer services to people who typically have a hard time finding small group homes in this community. So there's my memo and for board consideration, and then here are the documents. The intergovernmental agreement has the basic pieces don't change over the years unless you dig in. They have to do with my supervision and the cost sharing agreements between the boards. But the addendum that is of interest, there's a new addendum that was developed because of the changes. Our attorney, Dan Walsh, worked on this with the other attorney, which has been Barb Mann at State's Attorney's Office, to make sure that all the previous agreements about the cost sharing of the SILAs are intact, but to reflect the change in the ownership. So then in late November, Ann Robin, on behalf of the DD board, and Joe Omosage, on behalf of the mental health board, met with me and signed that document. So now you have a revised IGA and it is posted on our agency application website. Here is a report from the provider about the two group homes, and it's really just for part of the year. They gave us a report back in May, I think. So this is just a quarter. And I love that their reports have pictures. It just, that seems like a really great way to communicate a lot of information. So that's included here and it's very positive. So I'm gonna learn from them to frame things positively, even in hard times. And then the final document in your board packet is a draft of an RFP, what an RFP would look like if you wanted to find another provider, if this provider leaves and we are in that position, and that is the action that the Mental Health Board and the DD Board both choose. We have a draft already developed. The dates are highlighted because they would obviously have to be changed. But what I thought was important about this is to show you that to do all of this and to accomplish it in public with as much public input as possible, it takes from about March to September to get all the way to a signed contract. And then there are some other things that remain to be clarified, like, do we really want people faxing documents or using drives, or could we create an online application system for this project? These kind of technical issues are not, they're not really something I want to take your time with or trouble you about, but to present this to you is to show you basically what we did before if we were going to do it again. And if you have two empty houses, like I said earlier, you have all kinds of other options. So this is really probably a good time for me to stop talking and let you discuss. And as Anne said, we are watching the time. So that is a long document, but we're pretty close to a final version if you wanted it. So anyway, I'm gonna stop sharing.
I have questions. Okay, this is Georgiana. And you talked about one house being empty right now and the other house having two residents or one resident?
Three.
three residents. Okay. And are there people that are on a waiting list to occupy these houses? Do we have, you know, a demand? Is there a demand there? Yes?
Yes, and that's a good question for Kim. And we have also Lisa Benson is here. There is a puns draw. So there may be people who are about to start waiting for civil placement. But that information would come from the Independent Service Coordination Unit, and that's why I think Kim might know more, but Lisa is here. Do you know, Lisa, are there people who would be interested in, or there's Kim, in these group homes?
I'm sure that there are. I don't have any specific data. The question that was posed by the board member actually lends me to a question, if you guys do maintain a wait list, and I'm sure our ISCs and Katie Harmon are aware of that, but I'm not actually aware if you maintain a waiting list or not.
Well, we're not the provider, so we don't maintain a waiting list.
Provider, oh, that's right.
Yeah. And so this business would be between the ISC and families or individuals and the provider. So do you have any insight for this?
I don't have any specific numbers. I do know that with the recent PUN selection there, or the letters that are coming out, there are people that are interested in Scylla. I mean, I can't be certain, you know, they don't specify like in Champaign, but I would assume most people living in Champaign are interested in staying in Champaign. Katie did leave us a note that she had to leave for but she would likely know the specific numbers of people waiting for Scylla in Champaign County.
And I can make that request and then forward that on to Kim and Lynn if you'd like.
Well, I think that's also related to a developing new story that's kind of big, and that's what's going to happen with all those ones letters. So, you know, it may take a while to put that together, but it's an interesting point. Historically, I think that some families who were looking for Scylla were not interested in these houses. Is that true, Kim? Like they were choosing to wait for group home at DSC instead?
That is correct. From my understanding, a couple of years ago when I was an ISC, that there was people waiting for homes with specific providers.
Yeah, I would echo what Kim says. I think it's very individualized. You know, each family has different requests or specifications or things that they're trying to achieve. And then different providers have different approaches and, you know, different opportunities that they present with the different placements.
A question again. Are two Scyllas almost empty, or one's empty and the other's half full?
It's designed to be very small capacity. They're supposed to hold only three or four people.
Okay.
That's part of serving those people well.
So the people who have left, have they left because of COVID? Have they left because of better services somewhere else? Why do we have an empty house?
Because the agency has not been able to keep enough staff. And so what happened over the summer, and this is alluded to in the memo, one of their key staff people was murdered over the summer. And this had a ripple effect. Some of the staff who were close with her are still working for the organization, but COVID, when COVID started, they did lose some staff who needed to be home to provide care to family members who were no longer able to work in the group home. So that was strike one. And it's already a difficult community to recruit and keep good staff, good direct support staff. That has all sorts of reasons. I think the most obvious one is it doesn't pay that well. But then the second blow was this murder, and it happened in July, I think. So after that, it became very difficult for them to retain enough staff to run both group homes safely here. And they also have to have a QIDP to supervise the homes. And that's a person who's, for this circumstance, basically on call 24 hours a day. And I think I don't know as much as some other people on this call do about that problem, but it really has had to do with staff retention.
Staff, say that again, it has to do with staff?
Keeping staff.
Keeping staff, okay. And so if we as a board are faced with, I think you gave us three options. Sell the homes is one of the options, and put an RFP out for a new service provider. And what was the third option? I've forgotten.
The third one would be develop an entirely different RFP. If there's a whole different project. This project was about serving people who typically can't get a group home placement anywhere close to here. It started with 13 people who were not able to get anything at all, or they were placed 4 hours away, which is really a hardship on families. And it does have an impact on the care. If family members aren't able to stop by all the time, the care is different. Right. Even a half an hour away is a hardship for families. So the idea was to fill that gap. So this really does kind of require a special provider. And this provider is the one who served Stanley Liggis, the named plaintiff in Liggis versus the state of Illinois, a person who wanted to get out of an institution and live in the community. So, you know, there was a sort of nice, we started with a great promise, but the difficulties with keeping staff have really overwhelmed the agency at this point. So, you know, with fingers crossed, because some of these circumstances should change. Like, hopefully we'll come out of the pandemic posture someday. That might help. And the violence, I don't know, we're working on the gun violence from the other angle, but.
So making a decision about these houses is really iffy, like everything else is right now, because of the pandemic and the, you know, the violence in the country. And
well, I think that, well, and Gail has her hand up, so I'll wait.
Somebody?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry about that. I'm having technical difficulties. So I did want to say, you know, the staffing issue, I think, is quite critical, and not necessarily an answer I expect right now, but perhaps for further discussion of this at our next meeting. Can we look into how difficult the staffing is at other similar SILAs throughout Illinois? Is there a way to get that information? Because I think that might be really critical to us making a decision on, you know, how we continue on with these. I think it's very important to have these in the way they're functioning right now. But hopefully, I'm hoping to see that this is something that we can sustain. But the critical linchpin seems to be the staffing.
So I agree.
That's an interesting question. We have asked that question about a greater workforce than just SILA staff, but we can ask it there. We have heard from several sources that Champaign County is the hardest place to do business, because it's the hardest place to attract and keep direct support staff and even master's level clinicians. So I'm not sure why. So we've talked to the state about rates, and the enhanced rates do not belong to this area, even though our cost of living and rent burden is quite different from the surrounding counties, and it is more similar to Cook. So that might be one issue, but I do think it's a good question. Like, let's narrow down on this stuff. But I'm sorry, Deb has her hand up as well.
Well, I was just going to really pretty much say what you just said, Lynn, that the demographics of Champaign County are not like the surrounding counties. So there are a number of providers and who are able to do business quite well and keep staffed in our surrounding counties, Piatt, Douglas, Coles, you know, they seem to do well, and not just direct service providers, but
The QIDP in particular is a difficult position to fill here for some reason. Despite our resources, our large university, and I think some of it may have to do with the economics of Champaign County, which are unlike the rural counties around them. That's not the whole story, but I think that's probably a good part of it right now.
We did explore the question of why Champaign County doesn't have enhanced rates as are available in Cook and the college.
Yes.
And we, you know, it's very difficult even to get to that information on the state's website. So I think it's political probably, right? So, you know, maybe we need a legislative champion to speak for Champaign County. And I think we might have one. So that's another avenue that I've been talking to our committees about. We brought this up at a state DD committee a couple weeks ago, and then at the national too, that we really need some help to advocate for better services for the people who need them the most. You know, this is a really critical population, and that's why I appreciate you letting me bring you this information without a decision, because I think it's worthy of your taking some time to think about, and we can talk about it again in the future. Just, there are so many big issues in this project, including we're spending money. So that's also not a small thing.
Right. So, Lynn, I'm going to just take the prerogative here to try to move things forward because time is clicking away. This is a very important topic and it's going to take a lot more discussion. Can we put this on the agenda again for the next meeting? And you can give us some more information. But I think what you gave us was really for our information, and I would encourage people to maybe read it again. And
And move it, maybe, well, you and I could talk about agendas, yep. But maybe move it out to 2 months?
That would be fine, whatever works, okay. Yeah. Okay, we do want to spend a little bit of time with successes and other agency information. I don't want to cut people off, but I also want to remind people that we have a national event, which has actually already started. And the actual inauguration is going to be in less than an hour. So if we can wrap this up as quickly as possible, my understanding is that on a national level, the hoopla starts about, well, now, but Kamala Harris is going to be inaugurated before 11 a.m. local time. So for people that would like to see that in real time, I would like to move things forward. Who has something that they want to share from their agency?
Hi, Annette Becker from DSC. Just a few short things. Our podcast, Beyond Abilities, was uploaded on Stitcher this morning. I think remarkable thing is that 10 months ago, a lot of the people in the group didn't know what a podcast was. They started listening to them, had an interest in doing their own podcast. So again, you can find it on Stitcher and I guess hashtag Beyond Abilities or look it up through Beyond Abilities. The second annual holiday open house at the Crow went online as online sales this year. The response was just beyond our expectations. So a big thank you to everybody who purchased soap, wax melts, Christmas ornaments, etc. We will be sending out a satisfaction survey, and we're gearing up for Valentine's Day, so stay tuned. And lastly, kind of one of the best parts of this time of year is being able to recognize community members. You know, this has been a really hard year for businesses. And so to be able to recognize Planet Fitness as our business of the year, and then our personal achievement award winner, a young man named Tom, was recognized really for his growth in his job and just personally. being able to overcome anxiety and really learn a lot of new things at his job at Walgreens. We kind of look at our businesses, they're kind of fertilizer, and you know, people want to grow. And so we just have some really remarkable community members who provide that fertilizer for people that we support in their jobs. Thank you.
Thank you. Who else has something here?
I have just a really brief thing. I'm Becca from Community Choices. I just wanted to share that two of our members actually got married in December. And so they did it over Facebook Live to sort of share with their families. But just kind of as a nice thing that things are still moving forward. People are still moving forward with their lives. And we were just really thrilled for them. So I'll just leave it there because I know we're trying to wrap up. So thanks, everyone.
Mazel tov. Mm-hmm. Who else? Anyone else have anything wonderful, positive to share or concerns to share? Well, I want to thank everybody for that. Is everybody still there? I'm kind of having a frozen screen here. Okay. Old business is in the packet. We don't need to do that. Is there any mental health board input?
Just that their agenda is very similar to yours. They meet this evening. They normally have elections in January, but that'll be postponed to February.
Okay. And we want you to stay safe this evening.
Thank you.
Staff reports are in the packet. And again, thank you to staff for their excellent reports. And I have a couple of board announcements. They're basically upcoming events that maybe Lynn, you can make sure that people have. I think I have emailed you what they are. On January 27th, the local Carl, Illinois Medical School is doing a 2-hour web presentation or Zoom presentation or something on health disparities in the time of COVID. And I just emailed that to you this morning so you can share that with people. But I thought that that would be an interesting discussion having to do with cultural competency, health disparities, et cetera, and see what our local medical school has to say. And then on the next day, January 28th at noon, and I know Lynn, you're already aware of this, a group called Compassion and Choices is doing a presentation on the life and death of a local nurse midwife named Ray Spooner, who many of us knew personally. So this is basically not necessarily DD, but certainly mental health issues that would be of interest to the group. So both of those events are available online. And Lynn, I think you have those links and you can send those out to people. Registration is free. So, you know, if you're interested, you can do that. And that's all I have for announcements. Anybody else? All right. Do we need a motion to adjourn or do we just adjourn? I forget.
You can just adjourn.
All right. Well, thank you very much to everyone. And particularly, I don't know if the expo people have signed off, but thank you very, very much to the Disability Resource Expo people once again for their excellent presentation and their fantastic work throughout the year. And thanks to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anne.
Bye.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
On with the secular festivities.
I'm just going to have more coffee.
Me too.
Thank you.